Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear about the damaging effects of sequestration's return, and we'll see how Minnesota is recognizing our top veterans. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
October 13th is the Navy's birthday. On that day, in 1775, the Continental Congress passed legislation authorizing the construction and purchase of America's first Navy ships. Every year, men and women aboard ships around the world witness a Navy-wide bell ringing. The ceremonial objective is to instill in the sailors and remind the public the importance of and the sense of pride in the Navy's history and heritage. The Navy has an age-old practice of sounding the bell during the watches on the hour and half hour. This symbolic hallmark effort is as appropriate in today's nuclear and missile-oriented Navy than it ever was. From their historic sailing vessels in the late 18th century to every command today, bell ringing signals that someone stands the watch. Bell ringing serves as a powerful and tangible reminder of the history, heritage, and accomplishments of the Navy and an enduring tradition of the Navy birthday celebration. To the proud men and women who serve in our United States Navy, congratulations to you and your proud naval history.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now to talk about sequestration is retired Colonel Don Kerr. Don, welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here again.
Sir, for those listeners that might not have listened in the last time you were on the show, can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
Sure, Tom. I began my military career in 1979 when I enlisted in the National Guard. I went on active duty for a few years. I received a commission during that process and served in a number of positions in the National Guard. I was the chief of staff of the division when the 34th Division went to Bosnia back in 2003, 2004, and served a few more years, culminating as the director of plans and policy for the National Guard when I retired about 6.5 years ago. And I'm currently the executive director of the Minnesota National Guard. I'm a state civilian employee working for General Nash, overseeing the state agency that supports the National Guard in Minnesota.
And that's the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs.
That's exactly right, sir.
And their job, what is the purpose of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs?
So the Department of Military Affairs is the state entity that oversees and supports the National Guard in the various states and territories. In Minnesota, it's designated as the Department of Military Affairs in statute. And we provide support to the National Guard by maintaining the facilities, providing certain services like security and fire protection and those sorts of things. About 300 state employees involved, seamlessly integrated into the National Guard. Pretty hard to tell us apart, frankly. Loving that job. Hope I can do it for a while longer yet.
So all those years serving in the Minnesota National Guard set you up with a lot of knowledge and information to take this position.
Helped me with a lot of that, though. I will tell you, I'm the first one to admit that I learned something new about our agency every day, and that's fun.
That's good stuff, sir. And you're also president of the VESE chapter of the AUSA.
Yes, Tom, that's a capacity I'm here in today. I'm the president of the local chapter of the Association of the United States Army, AUSA. We're the John VESE chapter, named after General VESE, who we're very proud of as our namesake. And I will also tell you I'm very proud that the chapter once again won the Best Chapter Award at the National Conference earlier this week in Washington, D.C. There are 6 different size groupings for chapters, and VESE won in our size chapter organization. So we're one of 6 chapters that are named Best Chapter annually. And we didn't win last year. We were runner-up last year, but we did win the year before. And over the last 10 years, we won about half the time. So pretty impressive for an organization that doesn't have any active military installations in our footprint.
And how many members does your chapter have?
Right about 1,000, Tom. It varies from 900 to 1,100. Obviously, we'd like that to be higher and would encourage any of your members to join. It's very easy. Our national website is www.ausa.org, and a fairly simple process to join, and you'll automatically be affiliated with the VESE chapter if you live in the listening area.
And the mission of AUSA and your chapter?
Yeah, so AUSA is a 501c3 that was established by the Army in 1950 and actually is in law by the Congress as a recognized military service organization. And we serve as the voice of the Army and support soldiers and their families. That's what we do. The Army, as you know, service members that are serving are somewhat restricted on what they can say in the public if it's outside what the official policy of the military or of the nation is. And the association was developed to give a voice to the Army, to speak to the nation and educate the nation about what the Army is about and to look out for the priorities of the Army in the political landscape.
We're speaking with retired Colonel Don Kerr, president of the VESE chapter of the AUSA on Minnesota Military Radio. Don, I want to get to work here. There's a crazy word out there called sequestration that 10 years ago nobody ever heard about. But can you explain to us what that means?
I sure can, Tom. So sequestration is the term that's being used. There's actually a dictionary definition for it that's a little bit different. But it's the term that's referred to the Budget Control Act, actually the Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012. And the concept behind sequestration, it means to set aside. Sequestration was supposed to be an automatic budget cut that cut against all aspects of the federal budget that was supposed to be so heinous in its outcome should it be allowed to pass that a budget committee would work out a compromise before it passed. So it was actually put into law as a threat to the Congress, by the Congress, to either get their ducks in a row and come to a budget agreement or these terrible, terrible draconian cuts would come into effect.
And no one ever thought that would happen.
That's exactly correct. In fact, that thought was so deep that Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta at the time actually directed the Department of Defense not to plan for sequestration because he could not envision it going into effect and it would be a wasted effort.
So for the Department of Defense, what that meant was Congress was going to They went to sequestration, which is a 10-year, half-trillion-dollar defense cut that caused a lot of damage.
That's correct, Tom. And it does actually cut across all sectors of the federal government, but defense is hardest hit in the 10-year plan.
A couple of years ago, we had folks on, and we were talking about furloughs and layoffs and those kind of things, and then Congress passed the budget for 2014 and 2015, and I think a lot of folks thought sequestration went away. It didn't, did it?
It didn't, Tom. That was just temporary relief for fiscal years 14 and 15. And, of course, we're actually executing 15 now. That began on 1 October for us. And we did get that temporary stay. But if nothing is done by the Congress, the automatic cuts return in 2016 and will force down the size of the military, force out a lot of the modernization programs, and stop most of the research and development that's going on in the military. And at this time, with so much danger apparent in the world, things that we didn't foresee 3 months ago are suddenly major issues. No one 3 months ago, very few people knew what Ebola was. And now, of course, it's hot on everyone's lips and is clearly a major threat. And Army forces are being deployed to try to help stem the growth of Ebola in West Africa. That's a mission we never foresaw 3 months ago. Who's to say what other missions lie on the horizon that we haven't foreseen yet?
The things have changed. When sequestration first started, the administration, I think, was believing that we were getting out of Iraq, we were getting out of Afghanistan, things were going to slow down, the pressure on the military to perform missions all over the world was going to slow down. But lately, in the last few months and this year, there's hot spots all over the world.
And even in the places that we thought we were leaving. You're exactly right, Tom. And in 2012, thinking back to 2012 when this law was passed, we were on a glide slope to leave Afghanistan. We were out of Iraq or just coming out of Iraq. And the expectation was that we would be at some form of peace that we hadn't been at for a long time. But even in the same place, ISIL has stepped up and is a huge threat to security in the Middle East and something that's drawing us into that conflict.
So, Don, how do we get people to think and talk about sequestration?
Tom, you know, we have to speak to our elected officials and remind them that they have to do something about it. They're the only ones that can fix this. The Congress of the United States are the only ones that can fix this. And it's very important to engage with your political leadership, regardless of what party they're in. It doesn't matter who, once they're elected, they represent you, whether you're of their party or not. And we have to remind them, and we have a great opportunity during the campaign season because they're out among you. They're out among the people of Minnesota right now, seeking votes, seeking your support in the upcoming election. And this is the time to engage with them, to remind them that this has to be taken off the table. The risk to national security for the United States is simply too high. We can't let it stand.
Don, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the details and some of the damaging effects of sequestration so that our audience gets a good feel for how severe this problem could affect the military and the missions of the military. We're speaking with retired Colonel Don Kerr, president of the VESE chapter of the AUSA, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today to retired Colonel Don Kerr, who is president of the VESE chapter of the AUSA, and our topic today has been the effects of sequestration on the military, federal duty, and also the Guard and Reserves. And Don, sequestration, everybody kind of knows what that is. What kind of details does that mean? What kind of force cuts are we going to have in the Army, in the Air Force, Navy? What's it going to do to us?
Well, Tom, the cuts are going to be significant. So the Army has already reduced its size from about 520,000 down to about 500,000 on its way to 490,000. Okay, well, what does all that mean? That's actually coming back to the place where it was before the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan started. So that part of it really hasn't been that draconian. But what we're about to enter as we move into the next phases is actually reducing the size of the Army. And I'm going to talk Army numbers specifically today. Active National Guard and Army Reserve. The other services are being affected as well, but I'm focusing on the Army's mission here. But if sequestration is allowed to continue or goes into effect in 2016, we're going to see in the first year a 20,000 cut to the active component and a 40,000 soldier cut to the National Guard and an additional 20,000 to the Army Reserve and additional cuts in the years that follow those. So The big problem with that is it takes a long time to grow the experienced leaders that you need to stand up Army formations and have them be effective on the ground. So it's not just something we can shut down now and add 100,000 back in 2 years and call it good. All of the leadership development that it takes to get the world's greatest army, which is what we have. I'm absolutely, utterly convinced that we have the greatest army that has ever roamed the face of the earth, and it's because we've invested a lot in it. Unfortunately, there's always also an expectation that we will continue to have that army, and our global commitments require us to have that army. So I just came from the National AUSA Conference that's held annually out in Washington, and the theme for that conference this year was trusted professionals, because that's what our army is comprised of. In all components, we're trusted around the world as professional soldiers. Officers, non-commissioned officers, and enlisted personnel. The whole world looks up to us, and our friends ask us to come help them and to train them and to partner with them as we find new ways forward. That reduction in force really hurts our leadership capacity, because those troop units that come out reduce the opportunities for developmental positions. In addition to removing raw strength from our Army and giving us a lack of capability there. So the Chief of Staff of the Army spoke at the Eisenhower luncheon at that event on Tuesday, and he commented that right now, since they've just announced that they're going to deploy the 101st Airborne Division to oversee the construction of medical facilities in West Africa. With that deployment of the 101st Airborne Division, there are 10 divisions in the active component of our Army. 7 of them are deployed overseas. Once the 101st goes later this month, out of the 10
doesn't leave much room for error.
There's not much room for error, and there's not much room for future contingency. At the same time, we have numerous small units deployed around the world in Northern Europe and Northeastern Europe, in the Pacific Rim, conducting exercises with our friends and allies in the Pacific Rim. And there's growth. And I think it was General Brooks, who's the commander of the U.S. Army Pacific Forces. He's a 4-star general who is responsible for that entire part of the globe. He said, you know, everyone thought that with China's resurgence and Russia's resurgence that maybe folks would quit coming to the U.S. for assistance and they'd start going to some of our economic competitors, but that's not happening. The free world still comes to us to partner, and our capacity to do that will be dramatically restricted if the size of our army continues to shrink in a world where the requirements continue to grow.
And if our politicians send us on these missions, they've got to fund the mission so that you can do it.
Well, that's how I'd have to balance my budget at home. I know that.
Now, we said in the first segment that this was a half a trillion cut to the Defense Department alone. There was other cuts to the other departments. That's $50 billion per year across all the military, and a big chunk of that hits the Army. And it's not just the Army. It's the active duty Army, Guard, and Reserve, one Army, correct?
That's correct, Tom. It hits all three components of our Army.
So how do they allocate between active duty, Guard, and Reserve? How's that all working?
Well, it's a complicated problem to have to solve. And, of course, some of the costs for all three components are sunk in the active component. So the training base is all in the active component. All soldiers, regardless of their component, go to the active component for their initial active duty training. So you have to be careful how much you cut there, because we'll have a continuing requirement to recruit and train new soldiers coming into the Army, regardless of their component. So that has to be held on to. But then it gets to be a very difficult process of trying to determine what forces will I need for the future fight. And the Army did just publish a new document, a new strategic way forward of how the Army's going to fight. And it really focuses on smaller engagements. So a lot of folks, a lot of critics of the Army have said they've never been able to lose their fixation on large land wars. That's really not true. The Army has really looked at what the future might look like, and is publishing doctrine to change that. So in the force structure equation, the Army globally has to figure out what we need, the types of capabilities that we need. And then they have to look at what balance do we need, how much of that capability needs to be in the active component, how much of it should be in the reserve, and how much should be in the Guard. And then those numbers all have to be massaged to meet the capacity of the various states and territories, when you're talking about the Guard and Reserve, to support that force structure based on their population and their ability to recruit and retain service members into the service.
Now, when you were talking earlier about 7 of 10 divisions being deployed, that leaves 3 active duty, but then that gets you really close to the Guard and Reserve divisions that are there to back up and supplement. And it is all part of one Army, isn't
it? That's exactly right. And it is part of one Army. And there are 8 divisions in the National Guard that are standing right behind the active forces. And through something that's called ARFRGEN, the Army Force Generation Model, are actually maintained at a level of readiness so that at least 2 of those divisions will be available in a ready year at any time. But it does take time to train up. And so even though there are 8, you're really talking about 2 to 3 that are available at any given time, unless there are really dire circumstances that would cause us to reach deeper than that.
We're speaking to retired Colonel Don Kerr, the president of the VESE chapter of the AUSA, on Minnesota Military Radio. Don, we've been talking federal now. How does this impact the Minnesota National Guard?
Okay, Tom, so that impact on the national level, we'll talk about the Guard. If the Guard has to take that large cut of 30,000 to 40,000 people, obviously a portion of that will come to Minnesota. And one of the things that's unusual about Minnesota is we've been very successful and have been allowed to actually recruit above our end strength. So we have, I talked about that unit production or the unit build that the Army has to go through to figure out what kinds of forces we have. We've been allowed to actually have extra people so that we can be ready in those units. That is, by having an extra person, that means you can send somebody off to training and you still have the same capability in your unit. One of the first things that we'll lose is that ability to overstrength our formations. And that right off the top is going to take 1,500 to 2,000 folks out of the Minnesota National Guard, or at least the authorizations out of the National Guard. And it's not as simple as just saying, well, we'll just stop recruiting for a year. That isn't how it works, because we have to continue to feed service members into the bottom of the organization so they can gain the right leadership abilities and experiences to grow into the next higher grades. So,
and fill those specialty MOSs.
Exactly. So we have to have them in the right MOSs, the right military occupational specialties. That's what an MOS is. And with the right background so that they can move up through the ranks. What that means is we're probably going to have to take honorably serving soldiers and ask them to leave before they're ready to leave to make space for the younger ones coming in. So it's not a simple proposition, and it's really a suboptimal, one of my favorite words. It's not a good thing to do. If we can figure out how to avoid it it's very important. And this isn't just about Minnesota, though. This really gets to the depth, the strategic depth that the Army needs to be able to defend our national interests globally.
So the bottom line here is if Congress doesn't take any action, sequestration's coming back, and there's going to be another $50 billion cut in 2016.
That's right. And in addition to those part-time guardsmen that may lose their ability to serve, we'll have an equal number in the reserve. Not quite an equal number. It'll be a proportional number in the reserve. But we'll also have a number of full-time soldiers, people who earn their livelihood as full-time members of the National Guard supporting their unit readiness needs that will no longer have a job, and we'll have to lay off soldiers and put them back out into the workforce because we simply won't have the authorization to keep the full-time manning at the level that it's currently at.
And if our listeners remember, last year, the people that could afford it the least were laid off and furloughed for a period of time because of sequestration.
That's right, Tom. When they shut down the federal government at the beginning of last year because they didn't have a budget resolution, we had to furlough. First of all, before they shut down the government, we furloughed our federal employees one day a pay period for, I think it was three or four pay periods. And then they had the double shock of then being laid off while the government was shut down. So really a bad situation for people who are public servants who are trying to do the best they can to do their share in keeping our Army ready and our Air Force ready. So it's a bad situation.
Don, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners about sequestration?
Yeah, Tom. So I'll go back to where I started this thing, and the only way that we can fix this is to have the Congress fix it. And so I would urge all of your listeners to contact their members of Congress and the elected officials or the folks who are running for election for those federal elective offices to the Congress. It's very important that you pass on this information to them and say, this is absolutely unacceptable. I have to stop it. And I even want to give you a tactic. The next tactic is, my experience is there's been a tendency of those elected leaders to point it back and say, yeah, you're right, it's a terrible thing, and those other people have to fix it. But it's important that our listeners go remind their elected representatives that they work for them. And it doesn't matter if they're on the wrong committee. I, as a taxpayer, still have an expectation that my elected official will represent my interests. And if they have to go out and find people to help them, across party lines or in the same party on different committees, I don't care. I need them to do what we need them to do to run the government effectively and efficiently, and included in that is defending our national interests at home and abroad. And turning off sequestration is one of the very first things that we need to do to ensure our security moving into the future.
Don, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It was a privilege being here.
Thanks, Don. Speaking as host of Minnesota Military Radio, take a look at your newspapers. Take a look at what's going on in the world today. Take a look at the way the politicians are using our military and sending them all over the world on missions. Take a look at the hot spots all over the world. And when you do that, think about funding it. If we're going to send our military, we have to fund them. Get on the horn, call Congress, call your elected officials, tell them to deal with sequestration. Don't duck from it. Don't hide from it. Take it on head on and let's get something done. This is important. Please make those calls. This is Minnesota Military Radio. In a moment, we'll be back to show you how Minnesota is recognizing our top veterans. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll see how Minnesota is recognizing our top veterans. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Veterans at the five Minnesota State Veterans Homes enjoy the benefits received from volunteer contributions. Our group of volunteers contribute significantly to the success of our operation. By sharing laughter, smiles, or just a friendly ear, they improve the quality of life and morale for our residents. Our veterans enjoy a wide variety of recreational activities thanks to the generous donations of time and money from our community. Volunteers provide invaluable support by sharing their experience, time, and compassion with our residents. It is impossible to calculate the amount of caring and sharing that these volunteers provide to residents at our homes. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them how much we appreciate all that they have done. If you or someone you know would like to make a difference, please visit minnesotaveteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Veterans Voices is a program of the Minnesota Humanities Center that draws on the power of humanities to call attention to the stories and contributions of veterans. It empowers Minnesota veterans to speak in their own voices through plays, art, discussion groups, and the Veteran Voices Award. And joining me today to talk about the Minnesota Humanities Center's Veterans Voices Awards, retired Brigadier General Denny Schulstead and Captain Amber Mankey. Amber, General, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for the invite, Tom.
Amber, I understand that you're currently a member of the Minnesota Army National Guard.
That's correct. I currently serve as a company commander with the headquarters support company.
And you're a captain. How long have you been in the military?
Almost 9 years.
And are you enjoying it?
I love the military, yes.
Are you going to stay in long enough to make it up to Brigadier General like General Schulstead did?
That's the plan. Taking in all the advice, putting it in the pocket.
That's a good plan. And General?
Oh, she's not nearly old enough yet.
Well, you can give her some advice after the show today, sir.
You bet.
General, you're a retired Brigadier General. You were in the Air Force.
Yes, I was Air Force. I went through ROTC at the University of Minnesota, spent 4 years on active duty. And then I was a traditional reservist for over 30 years and just thoroughly enjoyed it. While I was in the Air Force Reserve, I was also a member of the Minneapolis City Council. And so I'm a politician, Air Force officer, and now a volunteer.
A general and a politician all in one body.
How about that?
I don't know how that works, sir, but you made it work.
Well, I was always in trouble.
General, you've been, I've known you for quite a few years. You're a board member of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation that I sit on, and I don't know if I know anybody that stays busier, involved in more groups and on more boards and helping people than you.
Well, it's fun. And when I left active duty, when I retired in 2000, I decided to devote my time to volunteer things rather than paid employment. And so I was a founder, co-founder of the Minnesota Military Appreciation Fund, the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, and was state chairman of Employer Support for Guard and Reserve. Lots of things to try to help our young men and women who are serving in the military.
General, it sounds like it's true that when generals retire, that's just officially, and you just keep on taking care of your troops, don't you?
That's what the rule is, you bet.
And their families.
And it's a real privilege to do it.
As we've heard Mr. Pop say over and over and over again, when the service member serves overseas and deploys, the family sacrifices well.
Oh, absolutely. In Minnesota, we have 18,500 Guard and Reserve members. These people all have families, and they also have employers. And so the people who are making sacrifices are those who are serving, their family, and their employers.
And Captain Mankey, in addition to being in the Minnesota National Guard and working out there full-time, you stay a little busy with some volunteer activities, too.
I do, Tom. You know, I volunteer some on the side with veterans and stay connected on that piece, but because I'm so involved as a full-time employee of the Minnesota Army National Guard and also as a commander, I choose other organizations, things that I can connect with. You know, Girls on the Run, I coach with them on Tuesdays and absolutely love it. Make-A-Wish Foundation. So organizations that maybe aren't military related, but fill a gap for me that I enjoy doing.
So you stay pretty, you think you stay as busy as General Schulstead?
I don't know. Maybe a little busier. I got some papers to write, but.
She's younger and has a lot more energy than I do.
Well, you both have something in common because this year you won the Veterans Voices Award that was given out by the Minnesota Humanities Center. And General, do you know who nominated you for that and why did they think you were deserving?
Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine who would nominate me for that, but it was a great honor. This year they had two different categories. They had the up-and-comers, the young ones. And
Captain Mankey, there she is.
That's right. And then they had the old guys, and that would be you and me. And so,
Yes, sir.
It was a great honor because what they were doing is honoring people who are veterans but also have done some things in their communities. And so it's not just for their military service, but it's for their community service also. And we have to remember that a very small percentage of the people right now are military veterans. Only a few are serving today, only about 1%, fewer than 1%. During World War II, it was a very high percentage of people were serving in the military. And this is a way of connecting people who serve and their voices and their stories with the people who have not served in the military.
And Captain Mackey, someone thought that you were deserving of this award too because you received it as well.
That's correct, Tom, and quite an honor to receive it. You know, it was really great being at the ceremony and being surrounded by like-minded people that are connected in a way that the humanities brings together, you know, the human experience. As General spoke about that veterans come and they're talking about their experiences and they're sharing them with the civilian people that maybe never served. And we saw a lot of that the night of the event, and it was really good.
One thing we have to remember, Tom, is for the last 30 or so years when we haven't had a draft, every single person who's in the military is a volunteer. Mm-hmm. And only 25% of the people who are 17 to 25 years old or so are even eligible to be in the military today for lack of education or because they're overweight or because they've been in trouble with the law. So we have a very small group of people who are volunteering to defend our nation. We owe them a lot.
General, Captain, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Veteran Voices Award from the Minnesota Humanities Center. We're speaking to General Denny Schulstead and Captain Andrew Amber Mankey on Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to retired Brigadier General Denny Schulstead and Captain Amber Mankey about the Minnesota Humanities Center's Veterans Voices Awards, which were given out on September 11th, 2014. They gave out 10 legacy awards to older veterans, and 20 on-the-rise veterans were selected to receive the award, and Amber received the legacy award, and you received the on-the-rise, right, sir?
Don't I wish.
General, it was a nice evening, wasn't it?
It was a lovely evening. And October has been designated by the legislature and the governor as Veteran Voices Month. And we're the first state in the country to designate an entire month to talking about the achievements of veterans and learning about veterans.
And Captain, the Minnesota Humanities Center did a nice job of it, and it's rewarding and interesting to see them recognizing veterans who go out of their way to help other folks.
Absolutely, Tom. This is the second year of the award that they've created, the Veteran Voices Program, unlike any across the country. So to be a part of it as it's just coming off the ground and to be surrounded by those legacy, experienced, very knowledgeable men and women was very honorable.
Yeah. Yep, it was a great evening, and there were a lot of deserving awardees at that evening. And General, I would assume you're always going out giving speeches. Did they sign you up to give some speeches for the Humanities Center already?
Oh, I've been giving a lot of speeches. I gave over 50 speeches last year about the military and about for patriotic events. The Minnesota Humanities Center is doing a lot of very, very good work in addition to this. On Veterans Day, they're going to have a special program in the evening where Dr. Paula Kaplan is going to be speaking and showing a film to kind of connect veteran stories with civilians who really don't understand what the veterans have gone through and what they have accomplished.
General, as you pointed out in the earlier segment, in World War II, everybody was involved. Vietnam, a lot of folks were, but today less than 1% of us serve in the military, and the other 99% sometimes maybe don't think much about freedom in the United States and the fact that we have people out there sacrificing and putting their life on the line to protect it.
That's right. We're at war, and now we're saying 1% is fighting the war and 99% are at the shopping mall.
Captain, do you ever think about that?
I do. You know, the challenges facing our current wartime military remain isolated as opposed to previous wars. As the general spoke, it was a issue. Everyone was involved in the issue. And now it feels like this divide where it's us against them. And how do we connect that? And how do we share our experiences? And and the Minnesota Humanity Center is doing that. They're having veterans come in and talk about their stories and share that with civilians so they know and can have a piece in it. And I think it's important.
And fortunately today, there's a lot of support groups out there for our military and the families, such as the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, the Yellow Ribbon organizations. There's a lot of help today, which wasn't there 40-some years ago when I came back, sir.
Oh, that's for sure. And now people are saying that even if we don't agree with foreign policy, because that's all set by elected politicians, it's the military people who carry out that foreign policy. And so agree or disagree with it, you have to support those young men and women in the military.
Well, we're pleased to have both of you here today, retired Brigadier General Denny Schulsteds and Captain Amber Mankey, two of the recipients of the Veterans Voices Award from the Minnesota Humanity Center. Thank you both for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining me now is Ralph Huesner, the Public Affairs Officer from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. Ralph, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's always to be good. It's always good to be on your show. Appreciate it.
You shouldn't lock the director in his office so he can't get on, and then maybe he can join us next time.
I'll make sure of it.
I understand you've got an expansion coming up for your emergency department.
Yes, sir. Our emergency department began receiving ambulances from the metro area about 4 years ago. We see ambulance runs from not auto accidents or forensic cases, but issues related to patient care, strokes, heart attacks, falls. Those are the three major illnesses and incidents where veterans need to be transported here via ambulance. In addition to the 6 to 10 ambulances that come here per day, we see a lot of walk-in traffic, especially during the flu season. Our emergency department sees an average of 90-plus patients a day. As a result of this increasing need, we are expanding our emergency department by about 4,000 square feet. That project is going to begin October 27th, a Monday. It's a huge undertaking, and it's going to take about a year. The end result, we will have 23 exam rooms, including bariatric rooms, isolation rooms, safe rooms. And there will be a designated entrance just for patients who want to go into the emergency department. Right now, the emergency department shares an entrance with outpatients. So we will have discomfort in the interim. There will be ample signage to help veterans get into the ED. But this project, long-term, is going to make it much easier to use our emergency department.
Sounds exciting, and hopefully that expansion and construction will go quickly.
Yes, we try and do these things in phases. We cannot close the emergency department, obviously, so we will be doing it in four phases, so we will always have access to the ED while we rehab and expand. We're not going to close it, obviously, but we'll have some pains during the renovation.
Ralph, I understand you've got some outreach events coming up for your two newest community-based outpatient clinics.
Yes, sir. Last spring, we opened a new clinic in Albert Lea, and then in June, we opened up a second clinic in Shakopee. Both are open 5 days a week, doing well. However, we want to make sure that veterans in those communities are able to use the facility. So we are going to have what is called outreach events to help unenrolled veterans get into the system. So on Saturday, November 8th, 8 a.m. to noon in Albert Lea, we will have enrollment facilitators at the CBOC. The veterans need to bring their DD-214 and any financial information to show that they qualify for benefits. We'll do the same on November 15th in Shakopee, 8 a.m. to noon. We'll have staff on site who will be able to help veterans go through the enrollment process. We're hoping to saturate the communities to let unenrolled veterans know that we're here, and if they have questions, we'll have enrollment coordinators both from VHA and VBA present to help facilitate the process and get them into the system. Both clinics are busy and expanding, but we think there are still veterans in the Albert Lea and Shakopee communities who may not realize that we're there and that they are eligible to receive medical care.
Ralph, we had one of your doctors on recently talking about the changes in the treatment for chronic pain. I understand there's some developments there.
Yes, sir. 2 weeks ago, the NIH announced nationwide 13 major studies on alternative approaches to chronic pain. Most of these studies are going to major academic centers. The Minneapolis VA is receiving two major NIH grants to study non-drug approaches to pain. One of these studies involves a survey of our young OEF and OIF veterans who are returning to capture their perceptions on alternative and complementary care. Are they open to using alternatives to drug use, traditional opioids, et cetera? So that will help us guide the services that we need to be prepared to offer. Unknown to many, the VA currently does offer alternative and complementary care. We have yoga, we have Tai Chi, we offer some chiropractic care, we offer aromatherapy. So we are not averse to using non-drug approaches to pain, but we would like to get some data on what the patients desire.
That was Ralph Huesner, Public Affairs Officer from the Minneapolis Healthcare System. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Don Kerr, retired Brigadier General Denny Schulstead, Captain Amber Mankey, Ralph Huesner from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we get a first look at an upcoming World War II documentary from the Twin Cities Public Television. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.